Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Phase Zero bonus episode number 4 starts right now. This is your Eternals spoiler-filled review, breakdown, deep dive with the biggest experts and enthusiastic, passionate people on the planet, I do declare, in the words of Michael Scott. So listen, welcome to Phase Zero. I'm Brandon Davis, joined today by Jamie Jurak.
Hello.
Joined today by Jenna Anderson.
Hey, everybody. I hope the like attempts you just made at our intro get uploaded on Twitter, because that was art. That was a masterpiece. Yeah,
this was there was, before today's show began, the audio that you're listening to right now, there was a lot of attempts to start the show. And when we're not live, it's just, it's a different beast. It's a whole different animal here. And sometimes your boy's not ready. Okay. All right. And we are also joined today by Aaron Perrine.
I am ready to talk about some Eternals. Let's get into it.
Let's do it. So everybody listening is like, what are they talking about the intro? Like, what are they? This is only going to be funny to us and Nick, who is backstage right now. But anyway, all right, Eternals, it's out in theaters. First of all, let's talk about this box office. As of our recording, which is on Friday afternoon, we only know Thursday's numbers, which were very good, I would say. $9.5 million Thursday night. It's on track for a $75 million weekend. It could go a little bit less. I think it'll go a little bit more, but that seems pretty close to where it's going to land. For comparison, Black Widow made $13 million on Thursday night. Venom 2 made $11 million on Thursday night, and it is ahead of Shang-Chi, which made $8.8 million on Thursday night. So Eternals shaping up to have a good weekend. Anybody have thoughts on the box office before we jump into the content of the film?
It is interesting, like, having that awareness of how much it made on Thursday, because, like, I went to the late Thursday night showing near me, and it was, like, the IMAX showing, and my boyfriend said to me afterwards, he was like, this is the least amount of audience I've seen at a Marvel movie in, like, a really long time. Like, there were still, it was maybe, like, 60-70% full, but, like, compared to some of the other IMAX showings we've gone to for, like, Black Widow and Shang-Chi, it's, like, those were basically full. So it's interesting that it's outperforming Shang-Chi. I'm very excited and curious to see what the box office will be.
Yeah, I'm curious.
I saw Spencer last night, and it was really full. Wow. And I feel like the movies are back. I'm interested to see how the whole weekend's going to play out. I was really surprised. I'm like, these people aren't seeing Eternals. What are you doing?
Yeah, I went and saw Dune on Friday, the Friday night that it came out. The theater was the most crowded I had ever seen it. I was like, wow, this one's available on HBO Max, and the theater is packed. So people are actually, the movies are pretty much back, which is very nice. Pretty strong box office for Eternals. It's not available on Disney Plus, so everybody has to go see it in theaters. I'm very interested to see how this one does week over week, because, like, I'm honestly, with how the reviews were, like, the reviews were tough on this one. So I think it's good to see that Marvel fans are forming their own opinions and going to see the movie, and I'm really interested to see what word of mouth does, because I do think audiences will be split, and I don't know what Jenna and Aaron think of the film yet. Jamie and I are on a similar page. So I'm very excited to see what everybody thought. And that's it. We're starting right there. Reactions, reviews. I'm putting 2 minutes on the clock. We each get 2 minutes to share our thoughts. You can talk spoilers if you haven't seen Eternals yet. What are you doing here? Jamie, you drew the short straw. You're at the top of the screen. You know, you can talk spoilers. You can share your thoughts and opinions. 2 minutes on the clock. Go.
All right. Well, I talked a lot about this the last time, so this will be easier for me to squeeze into 2 minutes. So things I couldn't talk about last time that I really wanted to were obviously that we get our first gay kiss in the MCU. I thought that everything about representation in this movie I loved so much, and I thought everything they did with Fastos was really beautiful and lovely. We also got our first sex scene. I'm ready to fight anyone who's like, kids shouldn't be watching this kiss between two men when there's like a straight up sex scene between a man and a woman in this movie. So
there was thrusting.
Yeah, there was some.
We need to have a whole separate conversation about that.
We will get to that.
I don't know why you made me go first. You didn't even know this is what was coming.
We will get to it.
Yeah.
You know, as I said before, I don't love the movie. I do like the movie. I still gave it a 4 out of 5. You know, thankfully no one came for me on the internet with my review. But you know, the plot's messy. All the stuff with the Celestials, and it's just a lot is going on. But ultimately the characters are great. And I'll watch it again. I'll probably see it one more time in theaters, but I'm not going to watch it 7 times in a month like I did Black Widow. That's the big thing. And you know, Harry Styles, I cackled when that happened in theaters. And I am so sad for everybody who got spoiled that moment, because when he showed up on screen, I laughed so hard. And my boyfriend was like, who is that? Which I thought was adorable. But so yeah, it's a decent movie that that I think people are being extra harsh on. It's not worse than Thor: The Dark World. That's insane. I think people because of Chloe are giving it a harder or they're just being harsher because she just won the Oscar and all that. And it is this big epic film. But in the end, I like it. It's not my favorite.
All right, Jenna.
Oh boy. So I'm going to say two things about this movie that are simultaneously conflicting. Part of me wants it to be a shorter movie. I feel like the late first act into most of the second act could have easily been a montage, or it could have had a little bit more of a purpose other than just like, we're going to retell the same pieces of information over and over again to slightly different characters, because at a certain point it got very repetitive, and that is where the movie started to lose me. Once the majority of the group was together, they were back in the spaceship, I kind of had an idea of what everyone's deal was. I was so into this movie. Like, the third act got the Jack Kirby of it all in a way that made me really, really happy. Just the visual of the Celestial coming out of the water is just one of the coolest things ever. I am so happy that that is just a thing in the MCU now, which is this giant Celestial head in hand that is going to be stuck in the ocean. I knew the post-credit scenes to some extent, so those still found ways to surprise me. We'll talk about the Dane Whitman scene, because that did have a thing that actually made me gasp, because I was not expecting a certain part of that scene, even though I knew that he was getting the sword. I think this movie could have been shorter, but then there's also part of me that is like, what if this was a 6-episode Disney Plus show? Because I feel like they touched on so many interesting things with like the theology and the ethics of what the Eternals are doing and their whole mission and their whole origin story. And it's like, I almost wanted to see more of that as opposed to just like, we have to go tell another person that Ajak is dead and the emergence is about to happen. So I liked it. I have some issues with the plot. I think there are ways that you could have done something a little bit cleaner, but it had enough that I liked, and I loved the cast so much that I really enjoyed it in that regard.
All right. Aaron, let's hear it.
Finally, we get to talk about this movie.
I know, you've been listening to so much about this film.
Uh-huh.
It's been just a very, very long road of hearing everyone else's opinion, and I'm like, well, I want to have an opinion too, and now I do. I'm a lot softer on this than I thought I was going to be because of all the reviews. It reminds me almost of the situation that arose around Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, and all the reviews around that. And everyone kept saying it was like some sort of crime against cinema. And I was going into the theater. I actually went to the theater with beer because I'm like, I'm about to have a good time if this is awful. I'm about to. And then it was fine. It wasn't that. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like Corpse Cattle. I don't know. Like, I was like, this is fine. What's wrong? I feel the same way about this movie. It's not perfect. It's probably not in the top half of the MCU, but I've seen worse superhero movies in the last 5 years. I've seen way worse regular movies over the last 5 years. I have consumed a lot of terrible, terrible content. So that I punish myself with, because, you know, it is what it is. As far as like the characters are really, really winning. And I think that's the biggest strength of this movie, besides Chloe Zhao's beautiful, beautiful like staging, is that the characters really seem to connect in the screening I was in. They all like, especially Kingo, anything with him, anything with Don Lee, most of the jokes landed. I feel like people really like Kit Harington, although he's not here that much, which was very interesting. He's up in all the videos dancing, but he's not here for very long. I think he's actually in the movie slightly longer than Chris Brown is in Stomp the Yard. And that's funny to me and like five other people that are listening. He's in the movie for like 25 seconds. He gets shot in like 4 seconds of the movie. I really enjoyed it though. I'm now very confused, because I don't know if the rest of you agree, but do you ever have moments where you feel like, did we watch the same movie? What's with all, like, where did all this vitriol come from? I don't know if I'm just too mellow. Maybe I'm too California for all this. I don't know. I'd love to hear what everybody else has to say.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with what all three of you just said. I'm surprised that we're all pretty much on the same kind of page, where none of us loved it, but none of us didn't like it. Like, there was certainly some things that I didn't like, but there was enough that I did like that I was like, yeah, if I gave this a review, I would say it was, like, I would give it a fresh review, but by a little. Like, I wouldn't, like, and that's kind of the weird thing about Rotten Tomatoes, is everybody's putting so much stock in the tomato meter, but it's not taking into account, like, review scores. It's just, like, good or bad. And I am surprised by how many people are giving it a bad review. It's certainly not in my top half of the MCU. It's my third favorite Marvel movie of the year, far ahead of Venom, but also
agreed.
Behind. Yeah, but also behind Black Widow.
Let's make that point. It's way better than Venom 2.
Yeah, for me, it's way better than Venom 2.
I liked Venom 2 for what it was. Like, it knew exactly the type of movie it needed to be, whereas I feel like with Eternals, it is ambitious in the sense of how many different types of movies it's trying to be, but I almost wish it had just kind of stuck to one type and just, like, ran with it. So in that regard, like, but I will agree, it is a better movie in a lot of regards than Let There Be Carnage was.
Yeah, Venom of the Ricards didn't do much for me at all at any point. But this one, I would definitely have said rotten on Venom Let There Be Carnage and not this. But the exposition dump where Arishem just tells Xerxes all four different parts of the story. And it's like this story that just keeps on going and going and going. It's just like telling us all the whole thing. That was a lot for me. That was too much for me. It pulled me out with how much of it we had to just learn in that moment. But there's things that I really liked. I really liked some of the characters. I think we're going to go through some of our favorite characters. Everybody's going to pick their favorite characters. I loved Fastos. I love how the representation just felt natural. Like, to me, Fastos is the character I think I identify with the most. And because he's just human and he's in love, and that's the reason he wants to be alive. Like, you don't have to have the same sexual preference as somebody to have something, to have that sort of thing in common with them. I thought Fastos was a great representation of humanity in a very similar way to what Dane Whitman was, but in a similar representation of humanity, but in very different ways, I guess is what I meant to say there. My biggest thing, why did Icarus even get everybody together? Because if Icarus had just killed Ajak and done absolutely nothing, nothing would have happened and the emergence would have gone off without a hitch. But he was like, let's get everybody together. And then everybody together stopped him. Like, as far as I'm concerned, like, Xerxes might have been like, yo, there was a deviant, what's going on? But, like, Kingo was making his movie. Like, Sprite was just chilling. Like, everybody was just chilling. I don't really understand why he got everybody together. But I don't want to be nitpicking. The Makari's action sequence at the end was awesome. I really loved what Lauren Ridloff was able to do, what Chloe was able to do with that. The movie was shot so beautifully. Something I want to talk about later is whether or not this would have been a better movie if it wasn't a Marvel movie, if it didn't have the restrictions of MCU canon, because it was super ambitious and it did have so much to say. But yeah, overall, I stick with my 6 out of 10, which to me is like, that's the bottom number you can have to have it be a good movie. Like, it's worth watching. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more the second time because I knew Icarus was bad and it added tension to all of the scenes that he was in with all of the other characters. And I think had that reveal been earlier, I would have liked the movie a lot more with all of that tension because I never really got attached to Icarus. So the twist was kind of like, oh, I didn't see that coming. But it wasn't like, oh, I hate him for it because I liked him. I didn't really like him. So that is what that is. But I liked Richard Madden's performance. I wasn't attached to Icarus. But anyway, all right, favorite characters. We're going to go around. Everybody gets pick 3. Aaron, you see who's on top. It's you.
Yeah. So I'm probably, and I wonder how much overlap we're going to have, because I feel like there's going to be a lot. Probably Fastos, Kengo, and actually, weirdly enough, I really love Gilgamesh. I love Gilgamesh so much. He has so much flavor to it. When he dropped the pie, it was probably one of the loudest times everybody laughed in the theater. It was like, it was. I heard a lady behind me go, oh, and I'm like, he's got you. So yeah, that's my three.
I love when he slaps the deviant in the face, just open-handed. Jamie, what about you? Who are your big three?
I said in the past, and Athena is my favorite. I just, because I like a sad girl, and Angelina Jolie, just her performance was so good. I loved the end with her and the kid. She's just, I just want to snuggle up to her. And then Kengo is a close second. Kumail Nanjiani, like, I think Jen and I both talked about this, like, we've been, like, fans of his for a really long time. And just seeing where, how his career has come, and just, like, he used to do what we do. He has this great story about interviewing Rian Johnson at, like, a con. And it's just like, it's so cool to see his career, and he's just so funny. And yeah, those are my, I don't even have a third that comes close to those two.
Jenna, what about you?
Yeah, I have to echo the Kengo of it all, because I've, like Jamie said, I've known Kumail since he was doing a video game podcast with his wife. Like, it's been this thing, and he was just, like, hosting a stand-up show in Los Angeles. So it is very cool to see him get to this point of being a star in a Marvel movie and also stealing so many scenes and having so many funny moments. It was like, he deserves this. Like, I'm very happy for him. I was really pleasantly surprised by Makari. Based on how you two had spoken about it, I expected her to not be in the movie as much, but the bit that she was in was just so impactful and so cool. I relate to and sympathize with the idea of, like, you can live forever. I'm just going to sit and read a bunch of books and just be, like, comfy in my own little spaceship. Like, I relate to that. I think that that's a great thing. And then I liked Cersei. I think that Gemma, I'm so happy that she got her redemption in the MCU. I think she was drastically underutilized in Captain Marvel. Like, I've been a fan of hers for years. So it's just cool to get to see her in this kind of leading role. And I think she anchored the movie in ways that were really essential. So I'm just happy to see whatever's next for her.
For me, it was Kengo, Makari, and then I think I want to say Druig. I really thought Barry did a great job as Druig. I thought he was Makari and Druig were two of the lesser used characters from the film, and I thought that they were both really good in the scenes that they did have. I thought Barry brought a great humanity and emotion to it, and I loved the sequence was that in Tenochtitlan? Back when he was, like, they were on top of the pyramid and he was just, like, questioning Ajak. I thought he brought a great, great performance there. So yeah, I find it interesting. Go ahead.
I was saying, am I the only one shipping Makari and Druig?
I love that
their relationship. When she thought he died, I, like, my soul got crushed. I want to see them.
How did he not die? Like, what are that's what are the rules here?
I know.
Like, what a knife can almost basically kill somebody, but laser eyes from 200 feet in the sky slammed into the ground, and, like, he just comes walking out. I don't know. Like, it's a superhero movie, so I know you kind of just got to accept it to some extent, but, like, kind of follow your own rules a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's kind of my thing there. Also, where the hell did Salma Hayek get that shotgun from on the ice?
The miners that got killed by them dropped them.
Okay, all right. Thank you, because that I'm stupid.
Which, okay,
our powers are healing people and summoning shotguns out of nowhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm telling you, I watched it and I was like, how did she get that? But okay.
There was part of me with that whole, like, setup in Alaska. I'm like, I almost want a one shot that is, like, the thing, but in the MCU, of just, like, what if this, like, Alaska research team gets, like, taken over by deviants and, like, how they fight them off and stuff. I'm like, that would just be a very spooky and thing that I don't think Marvel would ever do, but I'm like, that would be so fun to see, of, like, a weird little, like, horror movie kind of in
it. Would be Marvel's Suicide Squad with, like, coal miners.
Yeah,
because they'd all die. Those deviants were not messing around. No. But all right, let's talk about these post-credit scenes. That's why everybody's here. We know why you're here, Phase Zero listeners. You want to talk about these post-credit scenes. I've seen your tweets already. Everybody is very excited. These credit scenes are dope. The first scene sees Athena, Makari, and who was the third person
Druig.
On the ship, Druig, on the ship, the Domo, going out to search for other Eternals, I think, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, it's not a portal. It's not like a Doctor Strange portal. It's more in line with like a combination of like the Bifrost and the Spider-Verse multiverse effect. Like, I don't know what that was, but somehow Pip the Troll comes falling in, voiced by Patton Oswalt, the worst looking CGI thing in the whole movie. But very cool and very fun to listen to and see Pip the Troll realized in the MCU. And then he introduces Eros, brother of Thanos, Prince of Titan, Star Fox himself, played by none other than Harry Styles. I think even before this was spoiled, which I got to see this before it was spoiled, it was something that was like rumored. So I kind of had like this, it was still a shock to me though. I was still very delighted to see it. Star Fox, very controversial character, mm-hmm. in comics. I don't know if they're going to go that route. It's going to be very interesting to see what they do. What did you guys think of this first scene? Big takeaways?
I'm glad you acknowledged how bad the CGI was. I saw a comment online that compared it to Shrek 2, and I can't unsee that now. Like, he just looks like a troll from Shrek 2. And I feel so bad because I'm like, I had heard ahead of time that Patton was playing Pip the Troll. I was so excited to see that. And I was like, how are they going to do that? Are they just going to CGI his face? Are they going to like shrink him down? Like, what are we doing here? And my hope is that like whenever he appears next, he kind of gets the Korg treatment of like, he doesn't look the same whenever we see him next. Because that CGI, I think it was also because the movie had so much like practical golden hour kind of aesthetic to it. Just seeing him be this like holy CGI character that has such a distinct look was like, this is very jarring. The CGI is not what it's supposed to be. Yes. But like, I liked the Harry Styles of it all. I knew it was coming. I had seen a leak of what his costume looked like, and I still was very pleasantly surprised by him and Pip's rapport and kind of like how he enters the universe. He is a very controversial character, particularly with regards to She-Hulk, so that is kind of interesting. I am curious to see if they're going to give him like this holy hero treatment, or if they're going to dip into how he kind of sucks a little bit, depending on what comics you read. But I don't know. I'm just excited that he's in this universe. Like, it's such a cool thing to add.
I think it's so dope that he's in this universe. And just for everybody to get a little background here, there we have a YouTube video that you can go get like a really concise breakdown of what these credit scenes mean, but it's already dated because of what we're going to tell you at the next post-credit scene. But a little background on Star Fox for everybody who's listening, created by Jim Starlin. What Jenna is referencing about the She-Hulk thing is when Titan is destroyed, Star Fox is like, you know what? I don't need to stay here. And he just goes on to have some recreational sex all across the globe because he has an ability, or the globe, the galaxy, because he has an ability to like to influence minds. He kind of has a mind control. I don't know if you can really call it mind control. It is mind control, though, in a sense. It's like mind influence. But he starts convincing women to do sexual things with him. And it's not really their choice. It's his choice to make them make that choice, which that ain't cool, bro. You can't be doing that. So very much, if it was possible in our world, I imagine it would be illegal. I would hope so. And in the MCU, it is illegal because he ends up going to court. And She-Hulk is one of the people he has had sexual relations with. And he reveals that he did not use his powers on She-Hulk, but he did use his powers to manipulate her relationship with J. Jonah Jameson's son, John Jameson, which ultimately leads to them sleeping together and all this stuff. So it also is factored in the fact that he used his powers on Thanos when they were younger. And that, you know, leads to like Thanos. So he ultimately has his powers taken away from him as a punishment for all of this. So it's going to be very interesting to see if they have Harry Styles play this womanizing Eternal with those powers in this way. I don't even know if I want to see that in the MCU. I don't need that. We see that in the news. We see that in real life enough.
Aaron and Jamie, like they're so shook right now of like,
yeah, it's just like, I don't need that in the MCU. I'd rather have Star Fox kind of just be like this, like almost like an intergalactic Tony Stark. Like, he's just a playboy. He's like a, like, cause I feel like they're gonna have that in there just in the kind of cockiness that they brought in just this scene. But I don't think I need to see, I mean, listen, I'm sure they have plans for whatever they have plans for. And if they do something like that, I don't know. I don't really want to see it go that way. I don't know, Jamie, do you think?
That's hard to redeem. Like, yeah. I want to like him. Right. Even if he's bad, I want to like his character. I think he'll play a playboy very well. I think that I'd love to see him be bi. Of course I do. But like, yeah, there's an energy there. Like there should be nobody off the table in the galaxy, kind of like Lando.
That's like Loki. Like, I think when you're that, yeah. Like, especially even if you're not, if you don't start that way, you know, you just eventually are like, you know what? I want to try something new. Why not? There's nothing wrong with it.
I foresee that. But if he's like, getting people like power, using his powers to get people to sleep with him, that there's no coming back from that. I'm not going to like you if you do that. Yeah. I will say I could not name a single Harry Styles song, but I thought he was really good in Dunkirk. That's kind of my only, all I really know him from, also like memes. And so I'm excited just to his performance. I think he's going to be really good. And obviously I'm excited about Patton because you know what I'm going to say next. He was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I'm glad that his days with Marvel are not over. That makes me happy. I enjoyed everything about that scene.
Aaron, you've listened. I know you're listening, and
I love that Jimmy found a way to tie it back to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's what I came for. That's what everybody's here for. I mean, the sauntering up, and you couldn't avoid this. I tried, and I couldn't avoid this. I didn't see it beforehand. I was like, oh, this is going to work. He's a charismatic son of a gun. I don't know if you've seen any of the live performance. The presence is like there. Like, you know, some people are stars, but he like carries himself like he's a star. So it's going to work. And from the moment that they said like that this was rumored, I was like, is he going to be in Love and Thunder? Like, is that how this is going to like go? Because, you know, Valkyrie needs a queen, right? And who better to play intergalactic wingman than one Harry Styles?
That's got chills.
Yeah,
it could be really cool.
Yeah,
but I feel like if he was in Love and Thunder, this would have leaked.
Yeah,
that's the only reason I don't think so. But it seems like it could make sense because he could just as quickly as he got on that ship through whatever teleportation he did, get off that ship and go somewhere else. But maybe Guardians Volume 3.
I thought that he's probably like, there has to be one of these upcoming cosmic stories where he's going to not be with the Eternals and show up and people be like, who the heck are you? Like, don't you want to see him in the voice of Mario and Garfield banter back and forth? I do. But yeah, I'm digging it. I think it's going to be really cool. I don't know. Like, I'm sorry, Brandon. I brought up the no fly list of bringing up Chris Pratt and his animated dalliances. My bad.
It's me, a Star Lord.
Oh.
Oh, that was a Garfield hairball. This our timeline is so bizarre.
Yeah,
we are living in I don't know what Loki did, but we are in the weirdest timeline, I swear. Okay, but that's so. Does anybody else have anything they want to talk about from that first post credit scene before we move on to what was my favorite post credit scene?
I will say I was shocked knowing what both of them were. I was shocked at what order they were in because I expected Star Fox to be the like post credit scene and then the thing we're about to talk about to be the mid credit scene, which I'll get into it when we talk about it specifically. But I appreciate the decision to kind of flip it from what I had expected.
Yes. Knowing what we know now, it makes sense they flipped it. But that said, I feel like to the mainstream audience that is kind of the more casual Marvel movie watcher than the hardcores like us, the geniuses like ourselves and the Phase Zero listeners, that Harry Styles seems like the big payoff to leave you like, I had the best time ever when you walk out of the theater. That's usually what they like to do. But if you catch the details at the end of the second post-credit scene, which now have been revealed, shockingly, I'm surprised it's out there, so I'll just get right into it. Second post-credit scene, Kit Harington, Dane Whitman. He finds or reapproaches the Ebony Blade. It basically seems to be responding to him. He goes to pick it up, and somebody says, "You sure you're ready for that, Mr. Whitman?" That voice confirmed to be Mahershala Ali's blade. What? First of all, shout out to Eric Golden from Fandom for getting that confirmation. Good job, Eric. Good on you. Proud of you. Thank you.
This is the first I'm hearing about this.
Oh, shoot. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yeah.
We might need to clip that. I know this isn't available in video form,
but we need to make that a clip.
Oh my God. I'm so happy. I genuinely didn't. I missed that. I don't know how.
My boyfriend turned to me and was like, is that Mahershala? And I was like, no, it can't be. And then we were like speculating about it on the drive home. And then like with the current confirmation was this morning. It is so amazing to get to see you learn that in real time. That was incredible.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys, I don't know if he knows about me, but like vampires are my favorite genre of anything. And the fact that we're getting vampires in the MCU is like, I can't express my joy about it. And
is that Morbius is your most anticipated movie of 2022.
I wish. I really wish, man. I honestly have the only thing getting me to that movie is Michael Keaton. I really wish that I was excited. But you know what? Maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised.
Maybe. Hey, if you set the expectation bar low, it can only be exceeded, right?
Yep.
Hopefully. I'm excited for Morbius. That trailer was great. But anyway, this is about Eternals. But yeah, so honestly, the Mahershala thing, I did a whole YouTube video where I never even mentioned Blade because I was just thinking to myself, like that did maybe sound like him, but there's just no way. Like that couldn't have been Blade, right? And it was. So that's very exciting. I am, as Jamie seems to be, tremendously excited for the Blade movie. Add in Kit Harington's Black Knight, and I'll be doing cartwheels all the way to the theater, yo. I am so excited for more Dane Whitman. I am so excited for the Black Knight. I want to see more of it. So here's the quotes on this. Chloe Zhao said, that was the voice of one of my favorite superheroes, Mr. Blade himself. Blade, yeah. And then in regards to the movie, she said, you just have to wait for it. I don't know what they're doing with the movie, but Mahershala is a treasure. It's going to be epic. Kit Harington said it's really cool. Chloe texted me about that a couple of weeks ago, and it sort of blew my mind. I didn't know that that would be the case, so it's pretty exciting for me. Kit, I don't believe you. You told me once that you were dead, and you weren't, so I believe you knew about this. But anyway.
He's really good at keeping secrets. This whole press tour where he's like, I'm just a guy who works at a museum. That's it. And we're all like, but we know you're not. But like, we know your name is Dane Whitman. So it's like, we know you're lying. But he's like, I don't know. I'm just a guy who likes a girl. And I think that's hilarious.
Yeah, that man knows how to keep a secret. All right, we're gonna keep talking about this in just a minute. We're going to take a quick break, pay the bills, and then continue with the post-credit scenes and more discussion about the Eternals. See you in a second.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Welcome back to bonus episode number 4 of Phase Zero. We are deep into Eternals lore. We are talking about the second post-credit scene, which saw Dane Whitman meet Blade. So Blade is out and about in the MCU. That's very exciting. I can't think of anything in my head about. There might be something obvious. Forgive me if I'm missing something or don't have the knowledge or haven't read this book. But a Blade and Black Knight comic story, have they been intertwined before? Does anybody know?
I can't think of anything specifically, but it is kind of a thing of like they both can tangentially be associated with like the Midnight Suns and that kind of like spooky group, which we're seeing kind of develop further. We have a Moon Knight as of yesterday. We now have a Werewolf by Night. So it's like we are kind of building out that group and not even realizing it. Like, I am so excited. Like, I knew he was getting the blade, but like having actual blade be in that scene was so surprising. Like that, I was waiting for something in this movie to genuinely surprise me. And that definitely did. It was so exciting. So I know that like, we have to be getting more of him in some capacity. I had joked on Wednesday's show that if we didn't have that post-credit scene, he would almost feel like a CW supporting character of like, you're just in the, you have a comic accurate name, but you're just a guy. And like, eventually we could get to what you are in the comics, but we're not there yet. But so it's like, I'm happy that we are actually building that up and we're getting towards something.
I do want to say, when we were on the set of Eternals, there was this moment where the prop master had all the props for the film lined up. And I didn't say this before the movie came out because it was clearly something that we just wanted to protect the spoiler of. And they had all the props lined up, and all day everybody was telling us Black Knight is not in the film. He's just Dane Whitman. There is no sign of Black Knight. There's no Ebony Blade. There's no nothing. He's just Dane Whitman. And we walk into the prop room, and the prop master, for some reason this happens on all of the sets, the prop masters are the ones who usually say a little too much. Like, I'll never forget on the Infinity War set, nobody said anything. And then we got the prop master with no publicist in the room. And he was like, Hawkeye's got a new costume. Spider-Man's got a new costume. They just spill it. And so this time we're going through it. And then all of a sudden we get to this point where it's like, this is the Black Knights. And then somebody the unit publicist says, no, we're not, we're covering that up. And it was the ring. It was the ring with the family crest on it. And I don't know why they were so secret, why they wanted to protect that secret so much. It wasn't the blade itself, but I guess just any acknowledgement to his legacy was a tight-lipped secret. But I respect them for keeping the secret. I love surprises. We only have one Marvel movie left this year, and we already know the whole plot takes place on a bridge. So we're running out of secrets here. But yeah, I thought that was a fun note. But sorry, that was a little derailing anecdote there. But yeah, anybody else got anything about this post-credit scene they want to weigh in on before we get into more of the minutia, as Rocket would say?
So I guess the audience reaction to this was so interesting because there's so many different things that are going on in the MCU in the background that there's no way to triangulate what this big like stuff is building to in one nice big pyramid. You have Midnight Suns forming in the background with Moon Knight, Blade, Black Knight, and Werewolf by Night. You have Young Avengers silently just amassing another, like the Children's Crusade in the background. They just exist. You've got all the cosmic shenanigans and a full-blown Adam Warlock running around now who's cast. And Thor is running around with them too. And then just the regular Thunderbolts ground-level stuff that's going on. And we don't know what's going to happen in Hawkeye. We don't know what's going to happen in Spider-Man. I'm sure that's going to add some weirdness to it too. So they've clouded everything to the point where I guess they got tired of the internet trying to guess these things ahead of time. They're like, you're going to get it when you get it, because there's so much going on. I laugh because I'm like, what is Blade and them going to do in Secret Invasion? Are they even going to be around? Like, who even knows? Like, it's so amazing to think about. And you never thought you'd see these characters. Like, there's so many people in this cast of like the entire universe that could be in the same room where you're like, oh man, like did anybody catch him offhandedly, Kingo, saying, oh yeah, I hung out with Thor like years ago when he was a child. And I was like, wait, what? Like, huh? Where's that movie? Can we get that back? I want two of them throwing out for an entire movie. That'd be great. Yeah.
Baby Thor will sell action figures.
Right.
Avengers 5 isn't even going to be just characters crossing over. It's going to be all the groups Aaron just mentioned crossing over. It's going to be the reason why the Thunderbolts and the Young Avengers and the Midnight Suns and everybody comes together, and the Guardians of the Galaxy and the Asgardians of the Galaxy. So that's that post-credit scene was dope. All right, we could talk more about the plot of the film, or we can just kind of keep going on and just discuss that as we get into more of this the movie. One question I did put in the notes here that I do want to discuss is, would it have been a better movie if it wasn't restricted to the Marvel canon, or if it had just been set at a different point in the MCU? I do think maybe this is just a problem with me as a viewer. I felt like a lot of the film, it just was weird to see kind of a celestial emerging from the earth and think about the stakes here and like hear those moments of like Kingo had a relationship with Thor and Odin and all these kind of things like that. and not and it and simultaneously feels so isolated. And I think that the movie could have gone maybe even bigger or committed to its story in a way. I don't know. I don't know how to describe what I'm like. I wish I could verbalize it better. I know it's my job to verbalize these things, but Jamie, yeah, take over for me, please.
I put this in the review, and I think that like it's a strength and a weakness in terms of the fact that it's so its own thing. You do not need it to connect with anything else. But I think that it's cool just because it proves that we can take this franchise anywhere and do anything. But I agree that like you know when I'm having my frequent binges of like, what Marvel movie I'm going to pop in next? It's always like, oh, well, I just watched Civil War, so I guess I got to watch Homecoming now. And like Eternals, there's nothing of that. And I hope that one day down the line there will be. But because it doesn't connect, I'm not going to be as motivated to like just pop it in all the time. But your thought of it not, it would be better as not a Marvel movie. I don't know. I don't know if I agree to that just because I can't imagine that world, I guess, in which that scenario exists.
Yeah, I'm thinking like about the reviews and people being like so many negative reviews. And I'm wondering if like there's a mindset going into this film that you kind of know what to expect when you get a Marvel movie now to some degree. I mean, they are all a little bit different. You have Black Widow being a spy movie, Shang-Chi being a kung fu movie, Venom, whatever that was. and like just all these different kind of like Thor is very different from Iron Man and that type of thing. And this one was very different as well, but it also felt less like a Marvel movie for some reason because of its, I guess, like Chloe Zhao has a very unique stamp and it felt like she took out part of her stamp. She very much put her stamp on this movie, especially with compared to other Marvel movies, but she, like the combination of those two allowed neither of them to fully exist in this movie.
Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of the opposite. Like you're saying that people are harsh because it's not similar to Marvel. I think people are harsh because they expected more from Chloe. I think that I think that a lot of critics they review more movie, like we stick kind of in with our comic booky Star Wars-y kind of realm, whereas a lot of critics they also reviewed Nomadland. I don't think we reviewed that one. I think that is why there was a harsher, because I think the expectations were higher based on this Academy Award winning director was making this movie.
That does start just an interesting conversation about reviews in general and like whether or not you can judge them all on the same scale or just accept, like, I went into this one to have fun. Because Venom of the Recarnage got good reviews. Red Notice got panned. Mm-hmm. Red Notice is getting slammed. And so, like, do you go in, like, I don't know, do you go into a Dwayne Johnson movie with a certain expectation, or do you go into, like, a Marvel movie, or do you go into a Nomadland with the critics go into those movies? I don't know. But it is interesting. I will say this, Aaron, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I just think that important thing, I like to read reviews from people I trust and talk to friends who I trust and I like their opinions and stuff, who see movies before I do and read reviews of movies before I see them, just out of interest from people I trust to set my own expectation. But ultimately, that never deters me from seeing a movie that I wanted to see. I like to go for my own opinion. I think that everybody should. And if you love a movie, who cares what any amount of critics say, if they agree with you or disagree with you or your friends or anybody. It's your opinion. You're right for having the opinion. So that's I just wanted to share that because I know a lot of people are very excited for Eternals. A lot of them are leaving it, loving it, and saying, like, critics are crazy. I'm glad you enjoyed it more than I did. If you enjoyed it less than I did, I wish you'd had a better time. We're all watching these movies. I want everybody to have fun all the time. Aaron, go ahead.
I just would like to say, like, I think I would agree. Coming from, like, video game spaces, Metacritic is kind of a scourge, you know? People act like if a game gets less than an 80%, that it's some sort of, like, badge of shame. And I'm like, does it really matter? Like you said, if it facilitates conversation and people are enjoying themselves and people like it, does it really matter that someone reviewed it badly? I mean, you said yourself after you came out of the screening, you talked with a couple other people who were in there, Brandon, right? About like the movie and what you thought and certain plot points stuff. And when's the last time you came out of a screening and did like any longer than 15 minutes of that? So I feel like there's some real like value in that. And I think Jamie might be right about there's some people who were like going into this thinking that maybe she found some way to quote unquote backdoor some sort of more cinematic effort into this thing, but it's like, no, it's just like a movie that she wanted to make, and she wanted to make this movie too. I feel like some of those takes infantilize her, like, oh, they just were too strong. What if this just the movie she wanted to make? it's hard to say, you know?
I think Chloe did a hell of a job directing. I think the script is where the movie comes up a little short for me. Yeah. That's my stance on this one.
I want to see her do another one. Please don't let this be the end of her doing it. I don't know. I don't know if she's going to come back.
Oh, go ahead, Jenna.
No, I was going to say this is part of a larger conversation of like what you're saying about the marvel of it all and like how stuff kind of connected and stuff kind of didn't. I remember one of the very first rumors that surrounded this movie, I think before like casting and production had even started, was like, we're going to get baby Thanos. Like that was just kind of a thing that like the internet believed for like a week, is that like we're going to go to Titan and we're going to see little baby Thanos, and that's going to be part of the history lesson of what the Eternals are. So I remember building this movie up to some sort of degree, like years before it was even coming out, as like, this is going to be just like the unseen aspects of history throughout the MCU. And then we get to all of the various flashbacks that are in this movie. And by and large, they are just kind of ancient civilizations that are so far removed from anything that we're even dealing with in the canon that it just kind of felt so separate. The one thing that felt super jarring to me, and like, I was talking about this with my boyfriend, I feel weird about the fact of like the Hiroshima scene and Fastos feeling responsible for causing Hiroshima, because that felt so dark and real in like a context that I'm not used to in the MCU. There's part of me that thinks they could have still done that same sort of message of like, oh no, I gave them technology and they used it irresponsibly. You could have done that with like Sokovia or something that Tony Stark did, or like something that was in the universe, because it did feel kind of weird of like, here's our first queer character. This is a huge milestone for representation. And before we even are introduced to his family and his whole deal, he thinks he's responsible for this like massive atrocity. So part of me was like, that feels a little odd. Like, I respect the decision to do it, but I feel like there could have been a way to inject a little bit more of the MCU lore at moments like that in history, as opposed to just using like real world history as a template.
I totally agree with you. And just on that point, I also like the same way in Iron Man 3, like when they bring the president into the movie, I'm just not a huge fan of bringing kind of like super real world stuff, like really real world stuff into a Marvel world. Like, I get Marvel is kind of set in our world and not, anytime a movie does that, like one of my least favorite things in Kingsman is when they blew up like the head of the president and like stuff like that, where I was just like, you know, then you remind me that it's not this world. Like I think that I don't know how they could have done it better, but I agree with you. I think there could have been a cool way, like the Sokovia thing too. If you are going to pin some sort of guilt on a character like Fastos and show that he redeemed himself by, you know, trying to continue improving humanity, it would have been interesting to see it tied to like a Marvel event. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't one that I had a huge problem with, but I agree with that. I do like your points there. Aaron, sorry, go ahead.
Every time I see something, one of these things now, any project, and poor Tony gets brought into it and it's somehow his fault, I think about you. I was going to ask you specifically, how did you feel about the snap and the sacrifice being painted as this thing that like, well, maybe that wasn't the best thing to do? Because I was like, oh man, you can't even feel great about it now, because it kind of doomed us, because there's going to be a big celestial burst out of the like, oh, sorry, Iron Man, sorry you died. We're all going to die anyway. Ah, like, it's sad.
That was my problem with the movie. I think my biggest problem is that I know the world's not going to end. The Earth just went through a pretty traumatic event for 5 years. I cannot believe that whatever is happening in this movie is going to affect Earth. Truly, I struggled with that the whole movie. I'm like, nothing's going to happen. Nothing bad's going to happen. And usually, the stakes are a little more interesting or bigger. Even like, you know, I love that Black Widow is just I keep calling it a side quest, a little personal stakes. Shang-Chi, you know, just their extra world was at stake, not the whole world. I think putting the whole world in danger this soon after Endgame was a bit extreme.
It took us 45 minutes to get here, but Jamie just made the absolute best point. I could not agree more. I never realized it. Like, I think subconsciously that is what I have been feeling. I tried to verbalize it on Twitter that I thought it was like an Endgame hangover, that I didn't buy the stakes, but you nailed it. I never felt like the Earth was going to explode, and it actually would have if a celestial hand even started rising out of water like that. But that's besides the point. I don't care. I'll forgive that stuff. That's all part of superhero movies. But yeah, you nailed it. You just nailed it. Those stakes didn't hit me. And the stakes, the attempts at personal stakes, when it did try to get intimate, I wish that I had felt the weight of Gilgamesh's death. It didn't really hit me. For some people, it really did. For some reason, it didn't really hit me. And Ajax death, I was kind of like, oh, they already killed her. Like, come on. I was like, there's no, she's not actually dead, right? And then I start using my brain that from the comics that's just like, well, when an Eternal dies in comics, they just really get remade. So like, she's going to be in the movie again, right? But only in flashbacks. Yeah, I just, the stakes didn't really land with me. That's a real, I think that's genuinely like, and then my last thing, and then I'm going to shut up, I swear. But these are, word vomit of the mouth because I keep thinking of these things. There was no, like, because we started the movie with them fully assembled and fully realized as their powers, there was no kind, like, I didn't feel a moment, other, the only time I felt this was when Fastos pinned Icarus down. I thought that was really cool. But there wasn't, like, I didn't personally feel a moment of, like, payoff where they all kind of realize what they're capable of. The Unimind thing, I think, was supposed to be that kind of, like, Avengers assembled moment. But I didn't feel that. Like, it was kind of like there was no build towards this big moment of them teaming up or somebody realizing everything. I think it was supposed to be through Xersey. Call me crazy. I wish I felt it. And if you did, I'm really happy for you. Did you guys agree? Like, was that, like, I just didn't feel like big kind of climactic payoff or team up moment that kind of defines the movie for me. The highlight was Makari and Fastos kind of taking down Icarus, but those were kind of so individual and overcome quickly.
I will say, because like you mentioned it earlier with like Ajax death and how like the heel turn for Icarus, I knew it was coming from a mile away because I remembered how the one trailer starts with like the scene of Salma Hayek riding up on the horse and talking about Thanos and the snap and everything. And so I was like, we have not gotten to that scene yet. And that feels like too big of a scene to cut in its entirety from the movie. So I knew, I was like, okay, Icarus killed Ajax. And that is what we're building towards at this point. So I was kind of a little underwhelmed in that regard because I could tell that was what we were building towards. And it took like an hour and a half, 2 hours to even like officially say it out loud. But I agree. I feel like the opening scene and like all of the little flashbacks of them fighting together, it all kind of felt very similar of them all working perfectly as a team. And I almost wanted to see them interact with each other and get to know each other and like do certain things with their powers together and build that rapport together as opposed to just having it be exactly the same from the start. Because then once we got to the third act, as good as the third act was, it was good because of those individual moments and not because everybody was working together.
Yeah, that's all good points. All good. I mean, anybody else? Anyways,
trying to think about like, I don't know. Go ahead.
we've all been criticizing. There were things that I liked about the film, and I really enjoy the fact that Icarus's twist and his dedication to this mission. Maybe I'm looking too far into this, call me crazy, but it feels like a commentary, a parallel to our world's people who have intense, radical religious or political beliefs, and they are willing to do dangerous, bad things that a lot of other people who don't have those beliefs will be damaged by or worse. Impacted by, and I really enjoyed that they had such a commentary like that. Like Icarus really was relentless in this vision of what he thought his God was telling him to do at the cost of all these people's lives. And I was like, you know, that's an interesting parallel to things that are happening in the world. Am I crazy? Am I making that up?
No, I totally get that. Yeah. I've also seen comments that were just like, he simped so hard that he flew into the sun. Like that is also a way to look at his entire storyline.
Flying into the sun was pretty on the nose.
I know. It's like he stole little Icky's, like little Icky's deal.
That was your son's job.
I know.
Little Icky, R.I.P. I loved Kingo. I thought the valet was hilarious.
So good.
Yeah.
The valet was the emotional payoff of the movie for me when they all left the Domo and he said like, thank you all. Like it has been my honor to be with you all, and he was just kind of accepting his fate. That to me was the heaviest moment of the film. I thought it was brilliant. I thought he was funny, but then he added that heart, and I really enjoyed the valet. He was funny, man. And Druig, I thought was like Druig and Makari. I want to see more of them. And listen, we're gonna circle back to it for the end of the show. This movie had sex.
Finally.
I know. I wondered if we were going to talk about it or just leave it. Like my boyfriend and I were talking about it of like, I'm not unhappy that that moment is in the movie, but it does, I do feel like embarrassed on behalf of the parents taking their children to this movie, because it is to go from how the MCU has been of like barely anybody kisses, and if they do, it is kind of a big deal, to go from that to that sex scene felt like a very hard pivot in a way that I was not prepared for. And I'm like, I don't envy the parents who are going to have to deal with very awkward conversations with their children on the drive home.
I feel like kids are just are not gonna register it. It's just like smooshing. They're just kissing.
Yeah. Oh, they're smooshing, really, all right.
They're smooshing, but like, I don't know. I thought it was, maybe it's just because I'm me. I'm like, that's tame. whatever. But it did make me go back and be like, oh, I wish that, like, on my head, like, these are all the other characters I wish we could have seen smoosh in the
past. Okay.
Go ahead, Bree.
No, take us away. I was just going to make sex jokes.
I don't know why there's this big visceral reaction to that when I have visceral like memories of being in Deadpool 1 in a screening. There's a bunch of parents in there with their kids, and they did not leave. So if you would take your children to go see any of the Deadpool movies, anything else, some of the horror movies that we get now, I feel like they'll be all right. I feel like they're being exposed to worse on TikTok every day. I feel like that's absolutely true.
I feel like most of us were kids in the 90s, if I'm not mistaken, there. And like, I think that things now have gotten, I feel like there's a sense of people are more prudish now. I don't know if that's true. But like, I grew up, PG-13 used to be PG-13, and I think things are a lot tamer now, and I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing.
I'm with you,
because we all are very well adjusted people.
Good note from our producer Nick today, who said Iron Man 1 baby got pretty dirty. It kind of was like they were still clothed and they rolled off the bed. Mm-hmm. We almost saw a whole booby in this movie. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, we were pretty close. I don't have a problem with it. I see Jenna's concern, but
it was just like secondhand embarrassment. It was not concern. Like, my boyfriend and I were saying, we're like, if you told me there was a movie where Richard Madden and Gemma Chan have that scene, it's like, I am not complaining. I am just like, secondhand embarrassment is just overpowering everything.
Yeah. Listen, when I was young, I watched Austin Powers with my mom. I watched Wedding Crashers. At one point, we didn't know what we were signing up for. We rented Good Luck Chuck from Blockbuster.
Oh.
That was an adventure. So, good luck to all the parents who have to explain the birds and the bees of how the Eternals, they don't reproduce. I don't know what they do. They just kill time. But they just,
how they,
you know,
smoosh.
Kids, now sometimes you smoosh for pleasure.
Hey, if you're here for 7,000 years, you're gonna be passing time in a lot of ways. I don't know. These are things I'm always afraid to touch. I don't know what's. I have no gauge here for what we can or can't say. What will piss everybody off?
Welcome to episode one of the Cinemax podcast. Oh, God.
So on next week's episode, we have... Wow, I'm not even finished. That joke.
Good idea.
So, I think that's a great way to wrap up today's show. Overall, I think Eternals was fine movie. It's not in my top half of the MCU. It's not in my top half of this year's Marvel movies. I think it's gonna... Yeah. Anybody else have anything they want to close out today's Eternals spoiler discussion with?
I do just want to acknowledge Crow was like useless. Like
he
contributed. Like, they did not even give him a name. And also, I'm like, what the hell was Dan Stevens talking about? Because that was Bill Skarsgård. Like, he was doing interviews of like, I'm Crow. I'm gonna heavily hint that I'm Crow, and it's still just Bill Skarsgård at the end of the day. And we don't even really give him a name or have anything to do.
Maybe that he was Crow at one point.
I don't know.
What's his name? Utkarsh Ambudkar was in Mulan at one point, and then he wasn't. Yeah. So maybe Stan Stevens was Crow. Who knows? Those things happen all the time. I remember there was somebody who, I forget who it was, somebody in The Walking Dead was telling me they were in Godzilla, and then they weren't. They told all their friends they were in Godzilla. And then they weren't. So
that's Hollywood, baby.
Wow.
That's movie magic. So yeah. But I am curious what happens there as well. Aaron, you got anything you want to close out with?
I now am wondering, are we going to hear anything about any of the Eternals at this Disney Plus Day thing in a week and a half? Like it's doing well enough in the international box office that you would probably expect to hear something about it pretty soon if it continues on the current trajectory. So all eyes are on that. Also, you can't just say, oh yeah, this Blade here, and he got cast, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And we don't get anything. I am looking forward to seeing what we get now, because there are a lot of different ways this could all go now.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of international box
watermelon sugar,
I don't want to start a very long conversation here because I know this is one that could go for a while, and we're probably all on the same page on. I find it's very annoying that this movie is not being released in a lot of markets because of some elements which are likely the LGBTQ plus elements, but I do say it's beyond time that these things were incorporated in film. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I do want to say I'm happy that they're not adhering to that and removing it for the sake of just getting it released. I don't know if they're going to at some point, because I know they're losing a lot of money, but they're choosing to stand by what their filmmakers and their actors and their cast wanted to do with this film and what a lot of people wanted to see happen with this film. And unfortunately, as a result, it's not getting released in international markets, which is just stupid. But they're sticking by it. Ooh, so that's cool.
Burns me up, let me tell you. Mm-hmm. I hope they stick to their guns. I do.
Yeah.
I do. I hope so. Because didn't they censor Star Wars?
Yeah, I was about to say, it is a testament to the representation in this movie that you can't just do what Rise of Skywalker did, which is just kind of cut out the one gay kiss at the end of that movie. So it's I commend them for making the representation a little bit more prominent to where it is an intrinsic part of the movie.
Yeah. And Jamie, anything you want to close us out with?
You know, one thing we didn't talk about that I think is really funny is Sprite, how they made her human. And I think, did they only do that because that kid's going to get older?
Yes, absolutely.
There was no other way to do it. But my thing is, is she still going to have powers?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Well,
I think in the future, Sprite may become a TV star like Sprite is in the comics, because Sprite was last seen leaving with Kingo. So maybe this version of Sprite is going to go act with Kingo and become a star and carry out a career of being famous, like a child TV star in the comics. But we'll see. That's our show. I got nothing else. If you guys want to talk more, please. If you listened to this whole hour, honestly, we owe you a crisp high five. Send us a tweet and let us know that you enjoyed the show. Ask us whatever questions. It means the world. I know I love when you guys tweeted us and we tag us on Instagram and stuff. It just shows us that what we're doing matters, that people are listening and we love it. No, seriously, I'm joking a little bit, but I do genuinely appreciate all the kind words you guys share with us. And when you ask a question that's from 37 minutes into an episode, I'm like, yo, they're actually listening. So we appreciate that. Next week, because of all of you listening and supporting the show, we have Eternals producer Nate Moore for a 30-minute interview. So it's going to be fun. Thank you so much for the support. If you want to hit us up, it's at Hey, It's Jenna Lynn, at Summit Lake Hornet, at Jamie Cinematics, not at Jamie Jurak, like I have too often tagged on Twitter, and at Brandon Davis BD. We will see you all on Wednesday. Hope you had a great, safe weekend and enjoyed the movie. Can't wait to hear what you all thought of it. Later.